Blog Talk Radio.
Era noapte târziu.
It was very late at night.
Stăteam pe o piatră afară.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lui Stan i-am arătat piatra că n-a fost la mine.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stăm și mă gândeam ce am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Și odată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România m-au urmărit cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy they always try to run me over with cars. So I thought, they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină,
but it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit,
the light surrounded me.
Și din lumina m-a auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești tu disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why did you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-ai lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am un implicat cap.
I don't have a bed to let my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Dumitru, te-am adus aici că țara asta va.
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă ard aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut nu?
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California. Do you see what I've shown you?
Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pentru.
And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And one day it will burn.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Florida.
And then he showed me Florida.
Aici e Florida.
This is Florida.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And then one day it will burn.
Da, cu mine ce ai să faci?
Been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitri Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast. I am your host, Michael Boldea, and as of today, April the 25th, the year of our Lord 2019, we are live. Yes, we are back. I apologize for missing two programs. To be perfectly transparent and open with you, I took my family somewhere warm because we couldn't take the cold anymore. It's been one of those sort of delayed winters that really gets under your skin. Apparently, we're supposed to get more snow Saturday. So here we are, a hair's breadth away from May, and we're still getting snow. Could you imagine what the world would be like without global warming? Ha, ha, ha. But yes, now it's climate change or climate disruption or whatever else they want to call it. Because, they need some drum to beat. They need something to point to and go, the world's going to end in 12 years. We need to, you know, give up basic civilizations. We need to give up basic needs because... yes, the planet. I think we give ourselves a little too much credit, but there's just so much to talk about. There's so much to discuss. I'm hoping to get into what happened in Sri Lanka. I think more important than anything is to get into who did it. Because there's this mindset among Westernized nations that only goat herders and people who don't know how to use indoor plumbing would be willing to, you know, detonate themselves and make themselves into so much mincemeat. Well, it turns out that the young men who carried out the church attacks in Sri Lanka on Easter were actually from affluent families. They were well-to-do. They were upper middle class. You have to realize that religious zealotry doesn't care if you have money or not. And what ought to be disturbing to this nation, yet isn't for some strange reason, is that far too many people who ascribe to the Muslim faith believe in this sort of jihad, because that's what it is. You are supposed to either subjugate or destroy your enemy. If they will not bow, you behead them. This is the way of Islam. But see, another thing that I've noticed, and we're going to get into it. Like I said, there's just so much to cover. It's like I've been away for a year, not 2 weeks. Another thing to look at, another thing to notice, is the media's reaction to what happened in Sri Lanka, where what, upwards of 300 people died in 8 separate attacks in horrific ways, and what happened in New Zealand, and see the narrative and see how both issues were framed. Look, you have a former president of these United States and a former first lady of these United States that couldn't bring themselves to tweet the words Christian worshipers or Christians. They tweeted Easter worshipers were killed and, you know, all religions suffer because, no, I'm sorry, no. It's Christianity that has been under attack. It's Christianity that has been in the crosshairs of the godless and the evildoers and the zealots of certain faiths. And it's been thusly since the beginning of Christianity itself. But see, one lunatic went into a mosque and shot 60-odd people, and New Zealand is now imposing gun confiscation on its citizenry. They tried really, really hard. They really tried to connect the guy to some sort of Christian background, even if his great-grandmama went to church once just to get blessed by a priest because she married the next-door neighbor or whatnot, he would have been, you know, made out to be a preacher's kid that sat in the choir and you know, wrote out his daddy's sermons till the age of 25. Because there is a narrative that is undeniable, and the narrative is slanted against Christians. It's slanted against Christianity. And the more you look at how the media is trying to spin everything lately, the more you see the perversity with which they report the news, and it's not even reporting the news anymore, you realize that the orange-haired man was kind of right when he said the media is the enemy of the people. You know, I believe in freedom of the press. I don't believe in freedom to propagandize, because we've seen what propaganda could lead to time and again, and what most of these networks are doing are propagandizing people. They're not reporting incidents. They're framing the incidents to drive their narrative, if that makes any sense. So when they report it's not 60 people were shot in a mosque in New Zealand, it's Muslim worshipers there to commune with their God were slaughtered by a man who we presume had a Christian background. Take what happened in Sri Lanka. Nobody's talking about the Muslim upbringing of the people who carried out the attack. Why not? So let's get into it. I guess this will be the first topic. Apparently the Democratic field is growing. I think my next door neighbor's grandma and aunt are also going to run for the Democratic ticket. The hair sniffer himself has decided to wade into the muck. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because, you know what, I sniff my baby girl. She's 1 year and 4 months, and she still has that baby smell. And so when I go into her room in the morning, I sniff her hair. And it's not the Johnson & Johnson. Because I tried, you know, washing my scalp because I don't have any hair anymore with Johnson's and Johnson's, and it just didn't smell the same way. But I don't make the faces that Joe Biden makes every time he sniffs somebody's hair, whether it's an adult or a, you know, prepubescent girl. And the way he does it tells me that it's habitual to him. It's something ingrained. He can't help himself. It's not something that's thought out. It's something mechanical. And the look on his face when he does these things, especially to younger girls, is somewhat disturbing. And I'm sure that if perchance he does get the Democratic nomination, it's going to be a show worthy of tubs of popcorn. I'm just waiting for the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and whoever's going to get put into this meat grinder. But, you know, Joe Biden is for post-birth abortion, and yet he's the centrist of those people running for the Democratic ticket. Let that sink in a little bit. I wrote an article a few days ago while I was away. I was still writing. I brought my laptop. I have seasons. Let's put it that way. Sometimes I get into a groove and I write a lot. Sometimes, especially if something's happening in life, like babies, I stop writing for a while, and I've taken up the writing again. I'm about to complete two books, working on a third and outlining a fourth. And I'd missed it, to be perfectly honest with you. And so every morning I get up and I do a little writing because it's now a habit. They say if you do something for 2 weeks in a row, it becomes habitual, and that's what it has become. And on April 11th, I wrote an article called The Crazy Train. And Joe Biden had not yet declared that he was running. But the article says thusly, for all intents and purposes, it would seem that the Democrat Party is a slow-rolling crazy train with no less than 19 people vying for the position of conductor. Every day, the entire purpose of these 19 is to out-crazy each other, and if it were not for the scores of people applauding the lunacy, it would merely be something to laugh at, to scorn, to deride, and to make fun of. And that's the scary thing. Who was it? Bernie Sanders came out and said that the Boston bomber and all those of his ilk ought to have the right to vote from prison. So, masticate on that for a while, if you will, just to realize the level of crazy we're dealing with. I mean, we're talking tinfoil hat time, kids. We're talking about, you know, the abductee convention of 2019. That's the kind of crazy we're dealing with, and these people want to run the most powerful country in the world. Bernie Sanders wants to have the power, ability, and authority to declare nuclear war. That should scare you, because Bernie Sanders is certifiable. The crazy on this man is beyond anything you can imagine. And the way he frames everything he says, let me backtrack a little bit. I study human beings. I study human psychology. I study human psychosis. If Bernie Sanders ever gets power, the level of his malevolence will be on par with the likes of Stalin and Lenin and Hitler. And why not Ceausescu to a certain extent? See, Bernie Sanders is talking the crazy that he's talking from a position of impotence. Imagine giving Bernie power. It's the same didactic presentation of pure communists, people that are true believers, Marxists to the core like Stalin and Lenin, and God forbid Bernie ever get power in this country. he's not going to be crazy Uncle Bernie anymore. He's going to be the guy that's going to tell you when to eat, when to sleep, where to work, how much you can earn, and how much you could give, you should give to government. And to him, 90% seems like, you know, a reasonable percentage. So you, dear listener, should go to work and break your back. You should have blisters on your hands. Wake up every morning at 4 a.m., slog to work, do it joyfully, and then at the end of the month, write a man who's never held down a real job a check for 90% of your earnings. Because that's what Bernard Sanders is proposing. Understand that Bernie Sanders has never had a real job. His first job was close to 50 years old, and it was mayor of some dink town. 90%. So basically, Bernie Sanders is saying, you should be a slave. It don't matter if you're black or white. You're going to be a slave to the system, to government. And people like Bernie Sanders and those lickspittles who have no drive, motivation, or imagination to make it on their own in the most prosperous country in the world and in the history of the world will gravitate towards someone like Bernie Sanders because he's promising them Golem's Ring. He's promising them free stuff. Now, you keep working, but you're going to have to write Bernie 90% of it because we have to support those that are unwilling to labor, those who just want to sit in the basement in crusty underwear, play video games all day, yell up at their mama once in a while to bring down some cold Coke cans and maybe some Dorito chips. And this is who the base of the new Democratic Party is. Now, excuse me, Democrat Party, because people call it Democratic. It's not. It's the Democrat Party. It's disenfranchised youths who don't want to work, who've been so sheltered and cocooned in a bubble of stupid that the first confrontation they have in the real world where somebody actually tells them no, they break down and start cutting themselves. And the only hope is that there's enough sane, reasonable people that have families and have mortgages and all the stuff that makes 2019 the pinnacle of civilization. The only hope is that there's more people that have common sense and reason than there are basement dwellers. At this juncture, I don't know. So let's continue with this article, because like I said, I've got 2 weeks worth of stuff built up in me. I haven't, you know, released any of the pressure. So it's just, if it weren't so sad, you could laugh at it. You could make fun of it. But Bernie's drawing crowds. And every other lunatic running for the Democrat ticket is mimicking what Bernie's saying. Who was it? The Indian herself, you know, said that reparations are on the table. And, we should eliminate all college debt. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't make you sign on the dotted line, Elizabeth. Madam Warren, you of Indian heritage, one millionth or whatever it is. I didn't make anybody take out student loans so they could go buy pot and tequila. I didn't make you major in basket weaving or, I don't know, homosexual snail studies. You should have been smart enough to major in something that could actually earn you a living. And then you could pay back your loan. And while you're at college, here's a thought. Maybe you should have studied. Maybe you should have shown up for class. Maybe you should have realized somewhere along the way, in your 20s perhaps, there should have been an epiphany that perhaps this isn't for you. Why not a trade school? Learn how to be a plumber or a welder. Learn how to lay tile. Learn how to do roofing. Learn how to, I don't know, pour cement. Because people will pay you for that. What they won't pay you for is an authentic reproduction of a 1700s, I don't know, spittoon. So don't lay your poor choices at my feet and go, hey, pay for it. I got kids to raise. And I think that if you're paying into the system, if you're paying taxes, then you shouldn't want to pay any more than you're already paying. Because the waste, the fraud, and the abuse in government, I was talking about this with somebody the other day. I don't remember who it was. Look, government in America, I realized recently, is just as corrupt as government in banana republics like Romania used to be. We're just talking about higher dollar figures. Back in the good old days, for a carton of Kent, you'd have the world open up to you. Licensing agreements, whatever you wanted. Bottle of whiskey and a carton of Kent. But see, here we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars siphoned through charities. So the dollar amount varies, but it's just as corrupt. And right now, all the people that are vying for the Democrat ticket, all the ones that want to be the conductor, are corrupt to the core. They want to usher in communism. Make no mistake about it. Each one is crazier than the other. So the article continues and it says, no matter the position, it seems everyone is intent on one-upping everyone else. If one person says that ex-felons should regain their right to vote at some point, another comes along who thinks they should be able to vote even while incarcerated and in prison. I'm just waiting for yet another to up the ante and say that if you own a Ouija board, you should be able to vote on behalf of your dead relatives if they happen to expire within the last 10 years. Because whether they want to admit it or not, the Democrat Party realizes it has a problem. People like the dignity of work. They like being able to find a job. They like getting paid for the job they do. They like earning for themselves. And so, because of the current economy, you have larger and larger swaths of the African American community jumping ship, abandoning the Democrat Party. And they're realizing this. And so they're doing their utmost to make up for the votes that most of them are in lockstep about allowing individuals who are in this country illegally to vote is just the icing on the cake. Yes, that's been floated and it's still being floated. So let me get this straight. A person in this country illegally has in their eyes as much right to decide how the nation is governed as a taxpaying citizen. Good to know. Another hot topic seems to be reparations. Even though no one has conclusively laid out any sort of blueprint as to who should get what from whom, you see, my family, going back a few generations, were likely slaves of Romans. Who do I go to for my reparations? Not to be outdone from the latest that has been making its way on the internet, There has been actual talk by people vying for the presidential nomination of their party regarding white people giving up their homes to people of a certain level of melanin in their skin because it's just the right thing to do. If you haven't heard about it, it's making its way. If you're white, you ain't right. So because of slavery, I guess, you should give up the home you worked, 30 years to pay off to somebody that is dark-skinned just because, of slavery, even though your family wasn't here during those times, even though nobody in your lineage ever owned a slave, even though your ancestors were perhaps slaves themselves. So, never mind the fact that none of them are willing to set the example and be the first to do it. See, when Bernie gives up one of his homes, because now Bernie's rich, he admitted, I'm a millionaire. He's got multiple homes. When's Bernie going to give one of them up because it's the right thing to do? Never mind the fact that not one has volunteered to follow their own advice and give up their home and hearth to someone just because of their skin tone. Do you realize how racist that is on its face? I know that to some who just like free stuff, it sounds really good. But for an entire political party to so condescend to a whole race, insisting that the only way they have a shot at succeeding in this country is to take from someone else, is galling to me. This entire thing reminds me of an asylum for the mentally insane that I once visited while my grandfather was still alive. It was right after the Romanian Revolution, and the place looked exactly as one would expect it to look, given the sort of individuals inhabiting it. If not for the sunny day we chose to go on, you would have thought it was a movie set, replete with moss-covered brick walls, rusty iron gates, and hooting owls in the trees. Their funding had been cut in half by the state, and they needed help with food, with linens, with clothing, and anything else that we could provide. The doctor in charge came to give us the tour and informed us that there were four tiers to the asylum. Tier one was for nonviolent patients, those who just had psychotic breaks and thought themselves to be Napoleon or Nefertiti. The second tier were those who hurt themselves. The third, those who lashed out occasionally. And the fourth tier were those who were full-blown psychotics, dangerous and violent. We got to tier two before we decided we'd seen enough. I think the last straw was watching someone calmly and very judiciously painting a window with their own feces. I didn't have to see tier three to realize that, yes, these people were deeply disturbed, perhaps through no fault of their own, but that the facility needed our help. What scares me is that I think we've only just hit tier two when it comes to the Democrat Party contenders for the presidential nomination. I think we have yet to see the truly off-the-wall ideas. But they are coming, because all of them know that they have to do something, anything, to separate themselves from the pack. If you don't believe we're living in a dangerous time for this nation, then you're not looking hard enough. Take a tour, why don't you? And see what these candidates have already declared as their definitive positions. Once you've done that, consider that there are still 18 months to go until the election. And that was my article on all the people that announced that they were running for the nomination of the Democrat Party. So, yes, lunacy and hilarity will ensue inevitably. Now, to a more serious topic, because I didn't want to get into this right off the bat. There was an attack in Sri Lanka on Easter. Estimates are at 300. It's probably going to grow for a couple of days, I didn't write anything about it because it was just everybody was saying the same thing. Finally, I sat down one morning and I wrote an article about it, and I'm going to read it to you. But in order for you to contextualize and understand just how on point what I said was, I'm going to read you an article that came out today, actually yesterday, April 24th. And it has to do with the suicide bombers that carried out the attacks on the Christians, not Easter worshipers, Hillary. Not Easter worshipers, Senor Barack. Christians. Christians, say it. I know, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Christians. They've identified those that carried out the attacks. And I think even the authorities in Sri Lanka are surprised that they aren't your run-of-the-mill illiterates. They were actually well-to-do from affluent families. So, the article begins thusly, not mine, but the one describing those who carried out the attacks. Most of the jihadis who targeted Christians in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday, with a wave of suicide bombings that left hundreds dead and wounded at churches and high-end hotels, are well-educated people from affluent families, the South Asian island nation's deputy defense minister revealed on Wednesday. Deputy Defense Minister Rawan Wijewardene, I can't pronounce that name, Wijewardene is the closest I can come. His comments contradicted assertions by former U.S. President Barack Obama and his administration that a lack of economic opportunities is the top driver of Islamic terrorism. It's a lot less scary to believe that economic opportunities or the lack thereof is a top driver of Islamic terrorism than the truth that it's radicalized individuals who are keeping to the letter of the Quran that is the top driver of Islamic terrorism, economic opportunity or the lack thereof having nothing to do with it. Because once it begins to sink in, that even if you give them money, they're still going to want to kill you, you kind of get a little scared. You begin to realize that there's no pacifying these people. Their intent is your destruction. Let that sink in. So basically, the Deputy Defense Minister of Sri Lanka, Rawan Wijewardene, contradicted the Obama administration and their assertion that they're just killing Christians because they're poor. If they weren't poor, they wouldn't kill nobody. Well, guess what? Most of the jihadis who targeted Christians in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday with a wave of suicide bombings were well-educated, and from affluent families. They knew how to flush. They'd gone to school. They had money. Because they had money, the trappings of this modern world were available to them. And yet, they chose to blow themselves up, killing women and children and people who were just going to church on Sunday along the way. So the article continues. Most of the suspected terrorists are well-educated and come from upper middle class families And so they are financially independent, the minister told reporters, according to BBC. Their thinking is that Islam can be the only religion in this country, he also said, according to the Associated Press, adding that at least one of the terrorists got a law degree and studied in the UK and Australia. Without identifying him, Wijewardini noted that one of the suicide bombers studied in the UK and then later on did his postgraduate degree in Australia before coming back to settle in Sri Lanka. An unnamed British security official identified the suicide bomber believed to have studied in the UK between 2006 and 2007 as Abdul Latif Jamal Muhammad, noting that he was not on the British intelligence's radar, AP revealed. Well, the reason that he was not on the British intelligence's radar is because he was not impoverished, you say. Because if he were poor, then perhaps he'd be on their radar. But he's rich and affluent, and isn't money the god everyone is chasing? So if he has money, then he shouldn't want to kill Christians. That's why he wasn't on British intelligence's radar. It's because he didn't fit the mold. He didn't fit the stereotype of what we were told were the dangerous ones. Because they po. They so po. And because they po, they lashing out. No, they're Muslim. They're Muslims who hold to Quran and who are following through with Muhammad's teachings. And that should be of a concern, because there's a lot of Muslims in this world who want to be good and faithful Muslims. The revelation came as the death toll from the Easter attack climbed to 359, including four Americans, and the number of wounded stood at about 500, including several U.S. citizens. Under Obama, the U.S. launched a new global counter-terror fund to leverage public and private money to provide what then Secretary of State John Kerry described as more economic opportunities for marginalized youths at risk of jihadi recruitment. So basically, John Kerry was full of it as well. The Obama administration unveiled the $200 million initiative, although, as CNN News pointed out, much research has debunked the notion of a link between poverty and Islamic terrorism. Let that sink in. It is not about the poverty, it is about the zealotry. A good and faithful Muslim, one who abides by Quran, one who abides by the teachings of Muhammad, will desire inevitably, naturally, to kill the Christians. It is written in Quran. So, thank you, John Kerry, for being a useless lush. In March 2016, AP reported that ISIS was seeking to recruit well-educated individuals with sophisticated skills in Pakistan, as Barack Obama would say, noting that the group was targeting university students, doctors, lawyers, journalists, oh my, and businessmen, and using educated women for its fundraising operations. Several news outlets note that the April 21 Sri Lanka attacks on three churches and four hotels in different parts of the country marked one of the deadliest Islamic terrorist attacks in modern history, and the worst violence in Sri Lanka since its civil war ended a decade ago. Initially, local authorities said jihadis carried out the attacks on behalf of a local Islamic terrorist group, stressing that they likely received support from outside the country. However, Wijewardene on Wednesday claimed the attackers had broken away from the terrorist group and formed another one, because they're like mushrooms. His comments came a day after the Islamic State, which maintains a presence in the neighboring Afghanistan-Pakistan region, claimed responsibility for the attacks. So, what I wanted to get across and document is that those who carried out these attacks were not poor, impoverished, illiterate. They were well-to-do. They were college graduates. But they were also zealous for Islam. And there are many who are zealous for Islam. So, having contextualized that, I wrote this yesterday morning. As of this writing, the number of dead has climbed to over 300. I pray there are no more. I fear there will be. It's not as though I haven't heard of the bombings in Sri Lanka. I just didn't have anything new to add. I'd rather just sit and let the sadness wash over me, pray for the families of those whose lives were taken, and contemplate the world we're living in, and then be an echo of an echo. For 2,000 years, Christians have been brutalized. They've been martyred, slaughtered, and murdered. The only thing that has changed over the course of two millennia is that you can kill a lot more people with a lot less effort today than you could 2,000 years ago. It would take an entire Roman legion to make 300 crosses and nail 300 Christians to them. In Sri Lanka, it took 8 determined people. The means of our demise may have changed over the centuries, but the underlying motivation has not. Christians are no longer being fed to lions, made to fight wild beasts, dipped in tar and lit aflame come dusk. Instead, they are being massacred in their homes, in their houses of worship. They're being turned into mincemeat and bone fragments with the press of a button. Yet, here we are. The means have changed, but the motivation is still hate. The motivation is still an all-consuming desire to destroy Christianity by any means necessary. How much hate must one have in their heart for his fellow man to be willing to die in order to maim and murder others? We are seeing the fable of the scorpion and the turtle play out in real life, wherein even though the scorpion knows it too will die if it stings the turtle midway across the pond, its sense of self-preservation is overridden by its nature. Yes, the scorpion should have survived, but to do so, he would have had to let the turtle live, and his nature just could not abide that. Cheetahs don't change their spots. Zebras don't change their stripes. And some ideologies will never fully embrace the 21st century because their nihilistic nature is antithetical to coexistence. When the only three options one's holy book gives for the rest of humanity is to either convert, die, or be subjugated, there really isn't much room left for dialogue. The only one that comes close to peaceful coexistence is the subjugation. I don't know about you, but if I could help it, I'd rather not be the subject of a death cult that finds strapping a brick of C4 to a 12-year-old and sending them out to play in the park with the infidels an honorable and praiseworthy thing. There was nothing coincidental about the date of these attacks. The locations wherein they were carried out were likewise well planned. They were methodically thought out not only to cause mass casualties, but to leave an open wound remembered every year for decades to come. They were intended to shake men's faith. They were intended to make men question where God was in all the carnage. And that's the one thing the death cultists and their acolytes will never understand about Christians and Christianity. We do not live for our God in the hope of getting 70 virgins somewhere down the line if we're willing to get our hands bloody and forfeit our humanity. Yes, future glory is baked into the cake, but what sets Christianity apart is that we feel the presence of our God in the present. We're not promised the prize at the bottom of a Cracker Jack box only once we died in jihad and not a moment before. Our God is with us now. We feel his presence now. We know his love now. And one day we will see him face to face as we are welcomed into his kingdom. His peace, his joy, his loving kindness are all things that we experience in the present. And this is why we will continue to carry on as we have for the last two millennia. May God comfort the mourning. And that was my article. And the thing that I wanted to highlight, the thing that I wanted to point out, is that it is in the nature of a true believer of Islam to attempt to destroy. That's the reality of it. We can't beat around the bush. We can't say it's not so. We can't say only the economically challenged fall for this sort of thing. No, the ones that carried out these attacks were well-to-do. They were educated. And they chose to slaughter innocent people and destroy themselves along with it. So that's where we are. More will come, perhaps closer to home. It is inevitable. And the more we try to obfuscate and kick the can down the road and say, oh, no, it was just a microcosm of a microcosm. It wasn't. The percentages are staggering of those who follow Islam and believe with all of their heart that if you do not convert, you should die. Now, there's another thing that's happening that should be of concern, and that is a summit between Vladimir Putin and the chunky monkey himself, Kim Jong-un. Now, if diplomacy breaks down between the U.S. and North Korea, and if the Russians are able to step into the vacuum and fill a power void, I believe we should have every right to lay much of the blame at the feet of the media who have tried to undermine this administration from the jump. Now, you've heard it, unless you don't have radio, which means you're probably not hearing me if you don't. But, you know, there was no collusion. It was not found. There was no obstruction of justice. There was a frustrated, innocent man who perhaps said things, and I know that Mitt Romney found it grotesque. Let's leave Mitt for another time. Because if ever there was a poster child for globalism, well, good old Mitt is in the top running, let's say. So, Vladivostok, Russia. This is happening as we speak. President Vladimir Putin says he's willing to share the details with the United States about his summit on Thursday with Kim Jong-un, potentially raising Russia's influence in the stalemated issue of North Korean denuclearization. The two leaders first one-on-one did not indicate major changes in the North Koreans' position. Putin said Kim is willing to give up nuclear weapons, but only if he gets ironclad security guarantees. However, Putin said Kim urged him to explain the nuances of North Korea's position to President Donald Trump. Such an interlocutor role could be meaningful in light of Trump's apparent admiration of the Russian leader. Now, there is no apparent admiration. See, even reporting something that's happening between two world leaders, they need to stick their narrative in it. What is happening here is exactly what happened in the Syria-U.S.-Russia triangle a few years ago. Remember when Russia was trying to be the middleman and sort of negotiate? It's a power play. It's a power move. And I think that the AP reporter isn't bright enough to realize that this was a snub by Putin. Yes, we are willing to tell you what we talk about. But we must explain to you why you are wrong and they are right, and they need the assurances. And look, I understand. If I was Chunky Kim and the only thing keeping me alive was having nuclear weapons, sure, I'd be a little remiss with parting with them without, as they put it, ironclad guarantees. Now, after Thursday's summit in the Pacific port city of Vladivostok, about 75 miles from the North Korean border, Putin stressed that Moscow and Washington both want North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons. But he said the security guarantees Kim demands in exchange should be underwritten by multiple countries, hinting at an arrangement like the six-nation talks Russia participated in until their collapse in 2009. All right. Now, Vladimir Putin has absolutely no desire for North Korea to disarm because he knows that Russia will never be a target of the North Koreans. Because unlike, our government, Kim Jong-un decided one day that he'd flex his muscles to Vladimir Putin, there would be a giant crater where North Korea is right now. Because if history teaches us anything, it's that the Russians don't play that. And so Putin is in this for Putin. He hasn't turned into some magnanimous, charitable soul that wants to see peace and goodwill on earth. So if he can keep the tensions where they are, and if he could keep America from making progress with the North Koreans vis-a-vis denuclearization, then he's going to do it because it weakens the American position. And again, if certain members of the media and certain members of government were more concerned about the well-being of the nation than burying Donald Trump, whether guilty or innocent, perhaps we would have made more headway when it came to this North Korea thing. And so I think they are to blame, partly at least, for the breakdown of negotiations. So the article continues and it says, Trump has made clear that he is eager to work out a deal with North Korea and has already indicated that he thinks he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Russia's involvement in the issue could bolster his confidence, though some analysts think Washington and Moscow are too far estranged. Really? Whose fault is that? There was Pantsuit Barbie walking around with an IKEA button trying to, let's restart relationships. And from day one, anytime there was any sort of diplomacy between Russia and the U.S., every talking head was saying that, oh, he sold out. Donald Trump has sold out to the Russians. They have something on him. They're still saying it. These people aren't ever going to stop. And they're crazy. It's just going to get crazier. So that's something to keep an eye on. The whole triangle now, because it's no longer talks between the U.S. and North Korea. Now it's talks between the U.S., North Korea, and Russia. So, Lord willing, we will be back next week. We will be live, and we will most likely have a lot more to talk about. I thank you for your patience. Thank you for listening. I'm going to stop here because there's a lot more to talk about, but alas, there is no time. So, again, thank you for joining us. May God bless you. May God keep you. And, Gino, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mike. Couple things. We are having May 5th, 3 o'clock p.m. For those listeners that are in the Wisconsin area, Illinois area, we're having a concert at a final club that we're praying would get shut down, a gentleman's club, believe it or not. The owner is one step away from really giving his heart to Christ and allowing us to do a Christian music concert Sunday, May 5th at 3 o'clock. And if you're in the area, we would like to invite you to this event. And we're praying that God will raise up people that want to buy this last club in Dodge County or use it for Christian purposes. And we think that is the final cog in the wheel in Dodge County. Out of three clubs, this will be the last. Two are shut down. In the last 4 months, two clubs have shut down, and we're on one more club, working and praying that God will help it to be repurposed to be something decent. Finally, as Mike said about the Quran, as Mike denoted, Christians are considered infidels in the Quran. And an infidel could be translated as a non-believer of what? Islam. And there's no doubt that the hostility that Mike talked about is growing, and even in the U.S., because Dimitri, when he saw the internal revolution that would happen in America, would be fomented by what? Ideologies and racial divides, etc., and religious divides, because racial divides have religious sentiment and overtones to them. And interesting enough, the Louis Farrakhans and those in America with Antifa and other organizations have a serious bent towards persecuting Christians, even on college campuses, and persecuting Christians for our conservative beliefs. And so we have to keep praying for the persecuted church and asking God to help the church around the world that's under attack, especially in communist countries. There are still communist countries, North Korea, China, and others, especially in countries in Asia that are India as well, Pakistan, many countries, Africa. Every day we need to realize Christians are dying for their faith. And so keep the church of the Lord in prayer. And thank you for listening to the broadcast tonight, The Light of Truth. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth, with Michael Baldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com. Or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you.